oyez, oyez, the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Good morning. The court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 050986, Harris County Hospital District versus Tomball Regional Hospital from Harris County and the 14th Court of Appeals District. Docket number 060422, Reliance Steel and Aluminum Company and Samuel Alvarado versus Michael Sevchik and Kathy Law from Waller County and the 13th Court of Appeals District. And docket number 060755, Freymeyer Engineering Company, Inc., by and through Liberty Mutual Insurance Company versus Jomar International Limited and Mixer SRL from Dallas County and the 5th Court of Appeals District. Justice Harriet O'Neill is sitting in each of these causes but could not be here today for argument, but she'll be participating in each one. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in these arguments, and we'll take a brief recess between them, and we should complete all arguments well before noon. The arguments are being recorded, and a link to the video and audio should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is now ready to hear argument in 050986 Harris County Hospital District versus Tomball Regional Hospital.
May it please the court, Ms. Hesham will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes.
May it please the court. My name is Sandra Hesham. I represent the Harris County Hospital District. This case concerns immunity from suit. And the question before this court is whether the district's immunity from suit has been waived for claims of medical expenses a provider incurred in treating patients it alleges the hospital district had a duty to provide. There are three reasons why immunity from suit has not been waived. First, there is no unambiguous waiver in the law providing for immunity from suit. Second, the remedy of money damages that Tomball seeks is not authorized on its allegation that it would be authorized because the hospital district did not perform its duty. As indicated by this court in Federal Sign, an equitable suit for mandamus can be used to compel performance of a duty, but that does not mean you have the right for a suit for damages. Third, there are detrimental statewide implications, depending on how this court rules in this case, and it will result if this court accepts a reading of the act that infringes on the ability of the county hospital district to control proper allocation of indigent health care at a time when the legislative bodies of this state, as well as in this country, struggle on how to provide properly and allocate properly health care in our society. In this connection, it should be noted that there are no procedures or caps in the act that would provide for the reimbursements that Tomball alleges it's afforded. And this uncapped scheme.
I'll just ask you a preliminary question. Is the trial court's judgment a final judgment? And this is an appeal from a final judgment?
Yes, it is.
Why did the Court of Appeals think it was interlocutory?
I'm really not sure. I think that they just looked at 51014, the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, and went, it must be an appeal under that.
Counsel, do you believe that there's any party in this type of a situation that could sue the district for money damages?
Any party? If there was a contract with the hospital district, as you know, 271 of the local government code was added to provide for immunity from suit for contracts. And, of course, that is one of the things that we mention is that you can contract for health care services under the act that creates the hospital district, as well as the act, the Health Care Indigent Act.
Absent a contract, your answer is no.
I'm sorry?
Absent a contract, your answer is no.
Well, I guess there is also tort. You know, that we have the Tort Claims Act, 101, and I guess there's a few, like Section 1983, I guess, is a federal cause of action. But
under the circumstances of this type of case?
This case, no.
And which entities or individuals do you think would have the ability to sue for injunctive relief?
Well, I guess that's a good question. You know, obviously this court has struggled with that in different contexts. You know, the one problem we have here is without some kind of statutory scheme that provides for a third party to collect against the hospital district, it's kind of indirect. The person who actually has the right is the patient. So the patient would be the one who would normally have standing. Now, we have tax cases I guess this court can look to try to evaluate that question.
So how does that work? The indigent person goes to Tomball Hospital, gets treated, then the indigent person pays them $10,000 and sues you?
Well, I suppose they could bring a suit, or, you know, actually right now there is also that scheme in the Health Care Act where you can go to the department when there's a question about eligibility with respect to the hospital district.
So the indigent people could sue you, they could get a lawyer.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about mandamus relief or going to the Department of Health, that appears under the Indigent Health Care Act, there is ability to, when there's a dispute about residency or whether you're entitled to coverage under the Act.
I'm just confused if it was a child that was treated and the indigent parent couldn't pay, or suppose, if they did but they should have been reimbursed, and that they could sue on behalf of the child.
Correct, his next
so
friend.
If the hospital, Tomball Hospital, aren't they suing on behalf of the indigents? What's the difference?
Well, I think that they have to be given the right to act in their stead, and I don't know that they have that right under the Act. There is no statute that gives them that ability. So the person that has the right is the patient, since, of course, it's them that has the right under the Act.
So well, should the should Tomball have taken an assignment from the patients? Is that, then they could sue the district?
Well, if they had taken an assignment, but then the question is, what remedy do they have available? And that is the question before this court. Because in this case, we're talking about money damages. And this Act that they say provides for that does not afford that remedy. That's the only remedy they've asked for in their suit.
So even if the indigent sued, you couldn't get money damages in your view?
No, not under the Act.
So what does it mean for the district to assume full financial responsibility then?
That means that they are the ones that are responsible for doing that, just as the legislature has the responsibility to provide education
for
this state.
Wonderful, wonderful kind of responsibility that you don't have to do anything to discharge.
I suppose mandamus is the remedy this court has indicated is available when a governmental body doesn't perform its functions.
Well,
and this
surely,
court has,
surely the district is going to stand to its constitutional obligation.
I'm sorry?
Surely the district will stand to its constitutional obligation and not just say, well, that's what the Constitution and organic law says, but we're not going to pay.
Well, if the hospital district was to fail in its functions, this court has indicated that you can sue to compel it, and there's the Declaratory Judgment Act as well, to make sure that it performs its functions. Just like this court is assigned functions. Different bodies are accorded functions. I recall in the Neely case, which was a case that this court decided concerning education, the provision of education by a legislature, they said, you know, this court has said, you know, we've always told them when they weren't doing it right, but we never tell the legislature how to perform its function. And, you know, this is very important when we're dealing with health care. Because in healthcare, the structure is not something that's easily defined, and it's not something easily controlled. From day to day, things change. For example, 2001 was one of the claims that they alleged occurred. Was the year we had Allison in Houston, and you had a lot of problems then. So it was an unusual year where we had a lot of extra requirements on us. And
what does drive-by status mean?
Well, drive-by status, I guess we get that terminology from our state law in Chapter 773 of the Health and Safety Code, which is when there is not a facility adequate to provide for that patient. And so when the EMS calls ahead to see if they can bring the patient there, they let them know there are no beds available. And so they have to go to the next available facility.
Do you have a copy of 281-056 in front of you?
I do.
I'm looking at the second sentence. I'm sure you've studied it yourself. The first sentence, of course, the board may sue and be sued. The second sentence, a health care liability claim may be brought against the district only in the county in which the district is established. Now, it doesn't specifically say that districts may be sued, but it talks about where they may be sued, which kind of presupposes they can be sued. And how does that statement not imply waiver?
Well, you know, we do have the Tort Claims Act, Chapter 101 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, and 74.001 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code provides the definition of health care liability claim. It means a cause of action against a health care provider, and goes on to say, which proximately results in injury or death of a claimant. And it's obviously referring then to those personal injury actions that would be afforded under the Tort Claims Act. And I think that they added that section to clarify the venue for where you would have to sue that kind of cause of action. You know, one thing I guess I want to talk about, which wasn't talked a lot about in our briefs, was a little bit more about this scheme of all the different health care that's being provided by the different entities. You know, 5 years before Tomball was created, the people of the state added Article 9, Section 13 to the Texas Constitution. And that's really an important provision because in that provision, it was made clear that the legislature, in providing for the operation of a hospital district, is not required to provide that it assume full responsibility for the establishment, maintenance, support, or operation of, and it mentions mental health facilities, as well as public health department units and other public health activities. And it says the legislature shall not be required to restrict the power of any municipality or other political subdivision from levying taxes. And it also made clear that unless a statute creating a hospital district shall expressly prohibit participation by an entity, then it can be done. Well, and this is important because you need to know that when this was enacted in 67, you know, since then we have other people that provide health care help in Harris County, not just the hospital district, for indigents. For example, MD Anderson is a major facility in our district that provides, it's a unit that provides for charity care. Now, under Tomball's argument, anybody that provides any care to a resident who's indigent is entitled to reimbursement under 610.045 of the Health and Safety Code. But clearly, the legislature intended other actors. And why is that? The reason that is there is because we need to have an ability to have many resources available, especially in a very large county.
But how do you square that with Article 9, Section 4? It says the district shall assume full responsibility for providing care to needy inhabitants.
I think it does. The thing you need to understand is that that was enacted before Article 9, Section 13. So I guess we have to read them together to try to understand what the people of the state determined would be necessary.
So in what respect does Article 9, Section 13 limit the full responsibility that Section 4 requires?
It's not that it limits. It adds to the structure because it allows other entities to participate in a very important aspect of our society, which is to have other participants providing resources. And where would we be if we didn't allow that? Think about the fact of MD Anderson. It is number one in the nation for what it provides for cancer research and assistance, and it's an entity that provides indigent care through its charitable work. And the Tomball Hospital, of course, also, as a created municipality, has a responsibility to provide emergency care. Any entity that provides a hospital assumes all the obligations under the law that would be required of it.
We're talking about policy, though. If the policy is that someone in Tomball's position can't seek reimbursement, then why would they accept indigent care? Why wouldn't the patients be driven by until, you know, and never find medical care?
Well, of course, they can't do that because there's federal requirements and there's state requirements about accepting emergency care. When you have a hospital, and TALA is the federal scheme that is, applies, and then under Chapter 773 of the Health and Safety Code, we have a state scheme that applies. And every hospital that's created knows that it is subject to these requirements.
This, but as I was reading the briefs, it struck me that this is kind of like a game of chicken. You know, one hospital's going to say, no, we don't have any availability. Another hospital's going to say, we don't have any availability. None of them are getting paid. And so it's just kind of like, who's going to be the last guy that has to take the poor devil?
Well, you know, there's some consequences if you don't take a patient, and you should have, under both the federal and state scheme. So they can't just play chicken. They actually have to do their jobs.
The consequences if you take somebody don't get paid.
I'm sorry?
There are also consequences if you take a patient.
You know, you can have somebody that's not indigent that doesn't pay and who's judgment free.
But aren't we really, when we're talking about that, we're talking about the liability, not suit. I mean, we have immunity, we have liability, and we have suit that we have to talk about on the government. It seems to me like we're talking about liability, not whether or not they can be sued, which is what I thought we were here on.
That's correct, and you know that's important to state because we're not talking just about if there's a immunity from liability. Here we're talking about immunity from suit, and there is nothing that I can find that would provide that waiver. I see that my time has expired.
Any further questions? Thank you, Counselor. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
The court, Mr. Payne will present argument for the respondent.
Mr. Payne, assuming that the hospital district owes the money to, assume that for just a moment. How do you get to sue them since we've held and took that language, sue and be sued, doesn't authorize suit against them to go get the money that they owe you?
Thank you, Justice Johnson. I'm glad you asked that question, because this case affords the court an important opportunity to set forth in those situations when the court will find a legislative intent to have waived immunity to suit. In Took, the court set forth what does not get there, and what does not get there is merely sue and be sued type language in an organic statute standing alone. That's clear, and I don't disagree with that proposition. But this case is distinguished from that in several important ways. In Took, that case was a contract claim. This case is a statutory claim, cause of action set forth by the Texas legislature consistent with a constitutional mandate and scheme for the provision of and funding of indigent health care in the state of Texas.
What is the basis of the action? Not the waiver, but the action.
The action?
What statute is the basis?
It is a combination of Article 9, Section 4 of the Texas Constitution, which provides that in counties with populations in excess of 190,000, the voters may elect to create a hospital district which has exclusive taxing authority for the provision of indigent health care for the residents, indigent residents of that county. Exclusive. And it provides that...
So they get money. They've got the money.
Correct.
The state has the money also, and we don't let people sue the state.
The answer to Justice Heck's question and to your question goes beyond just Article 9, Section 4, which I was citing the provisions of, which says that once taxes are collected, it shall assume full responsibility And that kind of sets the limits beyond which the people having spoke in the Constitution, beyond which the legislature can't come in and limit it.
And then that's reflected in 281.046. And then is there any other statute?
Yes, there is. The other statutory enactment, which the Tomball Hospital Authority itself, a body politic, however, an important distinction, without authority to tax for those purposes, which we've said in our brief, once the taxes have been collected by the hospital district for that purpose, all other entities are excluded from being able to tax. That's important. That speaks to the legislative scheme, the people's intent. The funding of indigent health care in the state of Texas is to follow this scheme. And it's important because I believe the Indigent Health Care and Treatment Act is a pretty good piece of legislation when you look at it.
Just for clarification on Justice Heck's question, your answers are Article 9, Section 4, 281.046. Any other specific statutory provision?
Yes.
Just the numbers first.
The Section 61.004 of the Indigent Health Care and Treatment Act in the Health and Safety Code, which sets up a residency dispute procedure, unlike the one cited by the court in Took, which in that provision, Chapter 2001 of the Government Code, provided that this alternative dispute scheme would not be construed to be a waiver of immunity into suit. But in this section, 61.004, subsection G, says, a governmental entity, a hospital district, or provider of assistance. It doesn't say the patient, as was the hospital district's position earlier, that the patient would have standing. It says, or the provider of assistance. That's Tomball Hospital Authority. May appeal the final order of the department under Chapter 2001 of the Government Code.
But that doesn't give you a cause of action. This just sets up an administrative procedure.
I think the question was, what waives the immunity?
No, the question is, on what statutory provisions do you base a cause of action? That's the question. We just need the numbers first. And you've given me Article 9, Section 4, 281.046. Then you've given me 61.004G, and what else? On what you base a cause of action, assuming that immunity's been waived.
Section 61.0045B. A hospital district that receives information obtained under subsection A shall use the information to determine whether the patient to whom the services were provided is an eligible resident of that service area of the county, hospital district, or public hospital, and if so, shall pay the claim made by the provider in accordance with this chapter. Now, the chapter goes on, and I take issue with the statement there were no limitations on the payment obligation. There are. The chapter actually addresses those limitations by providing that the department may set the payment standards consistent with the families, needy families health program. I forget the exact acronym, but it's in the Indigent Health Care and Treatment Act. The legislature set that limit, said the department would have the right to set those limits on responsibility. And so it's clear that the statute itself, in answering the questions, both sets forth the cause of action and says how, I mean, there's only one way to appeal under the substantial evidence rule from a final decision of a state agency. And when the court here cited the judiciary and those that practice in this area to Chapter 2001 of the Government Code, setting up this administrative process, they knew, just like they did back in 99 when they passed Section 2260 of the Government Code that set up the dispute resolution protocol for contract disputes between counties or governmental entities and private persons. In that statute, and the court cited this in the Took decision, The court pointed out in the opinion, and rightfully so, that the legislature there said this provision does not waive immunity to suit or liability. They knew how to do that if they wanted to do that. In this provision of the Indigent Health Care and Treatment Act, that it sets forth this administrative procedure.
But how does an administrative procedure give you a cause of action?
Good question, and here's how it does it. Under subsection G of section 61.004 of the general provisions that apply to all entities, it talks about if a provider of assistance, it doesn't talk about the patient, an indigent patient. Judge Brister's got it right. Justice Brister, pardon me, got it right. The indigent patient is not going to be doing this. The person, if he's capable, he's living under a bridge, for heaven's sakes. He can't retain counsel and go up against the hospital district. It says the provider of assistance may appeal a decision, or either party that doesn't agree on eligibility or residency can ask the department to make the decision. If they don't like the decision of the department, they can appeal that to. And then they have a final appeal. If the final appeal, if under subsection G, a governmental entity, hospital district, or provider of assistance may appeal the final order of the department under Chapter 2001 Government Code using the substantial evidence rule of appeal, period. It doesn't say, however, this doesn't waive immunity, suit, or liability. The only way to appeal an agency decision, a final decision, under 2001 of the Government Code is to file a lawsuit in Travis County District Court.
What about this issue of the exact phrasing of the sue and be sued language? What do you make of that? That it's directed at the board. The board may sue and be sued, not the district itself. Is that legally significant in your view?
No, I think not. I think that's this kind of language. We see that kind of language in hospital district enabling statutes. We see that kind of language in navigation district type statutes, and the courts never made a distinction there. But I think the important distinction here is our cause of action, our statutory cause of action, is not a tort claim. The Tort Claims Act doesn't apply to us. That's how waiver occurs in tort claims.
So you're agreeing that second sentence, which I ask your opposing counsel about, doesn't help you because that talks about health care liability claims.
It doesn't help us or hurt us. Our position is we don't need it. In this case, we have a very broad, comprehensive scheme envisioned originally by the people under the constitutional provisions that said if they vote to create themselves like the hospital district did in 1966, they knew going in that if they did that, they were going to be fully responsible and that they were going to be solely able to tax. No one else would be able to.
So your view is, as petitioner puts it, that the district is responsible ultimately for paying for the indigent care rendered in any hospital for a patient who resides in the district?
No, if they're indigent only, and if they meet their eligibility determinations.
Yes, but I mean, wherever else they're treated, your hospital or any other hospital, if the patient is a resident of the district, then that treating facility provider should be able to recover against the district.
I see no reason they shouldn't. However, I would like to address this question put to the petitioner's counsel. This is not a widespread problem where this court's going to be opening the floodgates. The truth of the matter is that I've represented hospitals in Harris County. I represented Herman Hospital in the Herman versus Harris County or Harris County versus Herman Hospital case that Judge Brister presided over back in the 90s at the trial court level that dealt with this prisoner health care. For years, the Harris County would not pay for prisoner care, even though there was a Code of Criminal Procedures section right on point that said Harris County, the county shall be liable for prisoner care for prisoners in their care. They wouldn't pay it. Now, other counties would. And the truth of the matter is other hospital districts pay my clients without being forced to, as Judge Heck pointed out, surely the hospital district will step up and abide by its constitutional mandate. Most do. I've gotten checks from Montgomery County Hospital District just across the line. And as long as everybody plays by the rules and follows this constitutional and legislatively mandated scheme for funding and providing the care, it'll work just fine. But when a individual hospital district chooses to disregard that, the legislature has spoken. The legislature has said in this statute, unlike in the Took case, in this statute, right off the bat, under Section 61.002, definitions, paragraph 6, governmental entity includes a county, municipality, or other political subdivision of the state, but does not include a hospital district.
Let me ask you a question about that. That's under the statute, but immunity does not arise under the statute.
This evidences, good question. I say this evidences the legislature's intent for this limited statutory cause of action only, not tort claims, not contract claims. We haven't brought one of those. But for this cause of action that's founded upon those sections that I cited earlier, the section that says is liable, shall pay, and the section that says if they disagree with us, we can appeal it by filing a lawsuit against them in Travis County.
Okay, now let me ask you about that also, because you covered that a while ago. If you appeal that in Travis County under this statute, what is your judgment going to say? That isn't that a determination of whether or not the indigent care that they owe for the indigent care?
Good question. The answer is found in Texas Government Code Section 2001.174, review under the substantial evidence rule. Review of a final decision by the department that somebody, either the hospital district wants to disagree with, the provider of the assistance wants to disagree with, or a governmental entity.
But you don't have one of those.
We don't have one of those. Importantly, and I'll address that in a moment, because they gamed the statute. Now, I'll talk about that in a minute. They never said he's not eligible. They never said he's not a resident. They said, we're just exempt. It doesn't apply to us. They never contested it. There was never a dispute raised until the appeal. Then they said, well, the lawyer sit down and said, now, let's see here.
But a statute that says you can appeal an administrative ruling doesn't help you if you don't have an administrative ruling. Does it, or do you think it does?
Well, the question was, what does the chapter 2001 authorize the district court to do in a substantial evidence rule? The court may affirm the agency decision in whole or in part, say he is eligible, say he is a resident. It may reverse or remand the case for further proceedings if substantial rights of the appellant, have been prejudiced because the administrative findings, inferences, conclusions, or decisions are a violation of the constitutional or statutory provisions. The court could say, your holding here is contrary to the constitutional and statutory provisions. You have got to pony up responsibility.
Wait, that's what I was trying to get to. That appeal is on the eligibility, isn't it?
No, not just the eligibility.
But it's not on the live. It doesn't waive their immunity, and you can't get a judgment on that appeal saying hospital district pay, can you?
Yes.
Then why didn't you do that in this case?
In this case, the Tomball, and I can speak to this because I was the trial court lawyer on this case also. When these claims came up, they all had gold cards, most of them. Already been determined eligible for free care at Harris County Hospital District facilities by their own procedure. Had the card, were eligible. We sent notice letters. We telephoned, said, look, your patient wants to come in over here. Want us to transfer him somewhere? What do you want? Well, no beds available. Well, he's here. If you get a bed available, let us know where you want us to send him. Then we followed up with a written notice within 5 business days, even though technically under the statute we didn't have to. We made the telephone call within 72 hours. Then we sent written notice within 5 business days, even though we didn't have to. They responded back, said, not in our written notice and in our telephone notice, we said, He's got a gold card. He's a resident, indigent person of your county. In their response back, they didn't say, we disagree, he is not a resident. They didn't say, we disagree, he is not eligible. They said, the Indigent Health Care and Treatment Act does not apply to us. We're exempt from its provisions, and that's in the record. That was in our pleadings originally, which are presumed to be true for purposes of this proceeding. They never disputed that. The only time, and the Court of Appeals correctly pointed this out in its opinion, the only time we ever heard that was in downtown Houston in front of the Court of Appeals.
How is the authority funded?
The Harris County Hospital District or the Tomball Hospital Authority?
Tomball.
Through bonded indebtedness and the payment of health care claims by us, by our health care plans, by individuals. It's also, when it finds itself treating Harris County Hospital District indigent residents, it's supposed to be paid by the Harris County Hospital District revenues that it raises through taxing exclusively for that purpose. Now, when we treat a Montgomery County, because Tomball Hospital...
So there's no tax money that funds the Tomball Hospital. It's just payments for services.
Correct. It may issue bonds. And it is...
I'm not asking, but what pays the bonds? The answer is you can't, under the Constitution, since there's a hospital district, raise any taxes from Tomball people to buy a
That's
hospital.
Right.
It's got to all come from services.
Correct. It cannot tax now.
But is it funded by public funds? Other than from the district and payments for services?
Yes, to some extent. It participates in the Medicare program to some extent.
Does the city of Tomball help fund the
Not Tomball through taxes, office? No. It cannot do so. And that's why I said early on in my presentation that the scheme is actually pretty well thought out. Some statutory schemes you look at and it's like watching sausage be made. Not this. This was well done. This was well thought out. And you can see the legislature in the Indigent Health Care and Treatment Act, back from the original one back in 1986 when it first came out. I early on did an opinion letter on that one and all the morphs that have gone on since then, and amendments and modifications of it. It's well thought out. It touches upon who has standing. Providers of assistance have standing. How do they? What can they do if they don't get paid? They can sue. The hospital district is not a governmental entity for purposes of this statute, for purposes of this limited cause of action that the legislature created in 1986.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Bain.
Thank you.
Two very important words are used by this court in talking about immunity from suit. In Justice Brister's opinion, City of Galveston versus State, those two words were unmistakable clarity. These are words that have also been stated by other members of this court. And
So how is this supposed to work? How is Tomball supposed to pay for indigent care?
Well, Tomball Hospital is able to charge fees. It's able to access...
When I go to Tomball Hospital, I'm going to pay for indigent care.
Correct.
Even though if I live in Tomball, I'm paying money to your client for indigent care, which you won't pay to them.
Right. Tomball, just like...
Should it work that way? That seems like I'm paying twice if I go to their hospital.
You know, there's a lot of different schemes available from the state and federal government that help with indigent care issues. For example, when the FEMA helped in some of the instances when we get extra people
sure.
in
federal,
connection
federal
with that.
Grants.
There's also Medicaid. There's also in the federal scheme of EMTALA for the emergency care and under our state scheme. And so there's different...
But if those covered everything, we wouldn't need a hospital district.
But you know, we need a hospital district because somebody has to decide how what resources need to be created, where hospitals need to be, where do you need to have specialists. You know, this is a problem we have across the entire state.
Okay, and across the entire state, are other districts refusing payment along the same lines, on the same grounds?
You know, I'm not aware of a single case where this issue has come up, so I'm think that it's just not an issue that anyone has creatively attempted. We do have that happening in this case. So the fact that we don't have a case doesn't really tell us anything other than maybe it's just not something that's
What distinguishes perceived. Harris County from Montgomery County in that Mr. Payne said that his client, Tom Ball Regional Hospital, was able to collect from Montgomery County but not Harris County?
Well, I really can't tell you the answer to that. I don't have a record.
Are the statutes different? Don't they apply equally?
Well, you know, sometimes people decide to pay claims for different reasons. Certainly the hospital district...
But following the statute, that would be a good reason.
Well, the hospital district believes it is following the statute, and it also believes that it's making sure that its resources are available to take care of the many needs that our county has. Now, we have to do it in the way we believe the law provides. And, you know, the law provides under Article 9, Section 13, that municipalities may participate in providing public health services. The legislature currently provides that they can operate a hospital to provide, among other things, emergency services as they did in this case. And in addition to that, the legislature could give them the right to levy taxes if they wanted to go and ask for that. They haven't asked for that, so apparently they haven't found it necessary. But if they wanted to, they could, because Article 9, Section 13 provides they could.
If there are enough taxes around.
And I guess that is another big issue. If right now we have indigent care in Harris County being provided by a number of charitable sources, and if we were to accept the position of my opponent, all of those charitable sources could say, hey, we don't have to do this. You can just get money from your hospital district. We don't have to do this as an additional resource. I don't think the legislature would like that because, see, that does affect the tax revenue that has to be raised from the hospital district.
But Methodist Hospital is a little different from the Tomball Regional Hospital. Methodist Hospital is a charitable institution.
Correct.
As a lot of hospitals are. I take it Tomball Regional Hospital is not. So there might be a reason why their taxpayers want them to be paid back where the Methodists feel like they're providing service to the community and they might not ask.
Well, you know, they may feel that they want to be paid back, but you know, there's a lot of situations where you don't get money back when you provide a statutory obligation. In this case, Tomball provided
anything
one.
In the statute that prevents we've been focusing mostly on whether they can sue you, because that's the question before us. Is there anything that prevents you from paying Tomball?
Actually, we could set up a contract, and that is provided for in the statute.
There would be nothing that prevents you paying it if you wanted.
No, if we wanted to do that because we felt it would encourage more participation by them in the indigent health care of the county, we certainly could do that. And those would be one of the resource issues that we would have to consider. And as you know, in our act, it would have to be something that's approved by Commissioner's Court. So it has to go through a lot of policy deliberation. In conclusion...
Counsel, your time's up, but I would like, if you don't mind, have you participated in one of the appeals on substantial evidence in regard to eligibility that's been referenced here?
Substantial evidence is not an issue at all.
No, it's not here, but have you participated in one of those? And what I'm wondering is...
No, there has never been any type of review involving that.
Okay, so that you've not... That process just hasn't happened.
That process does not occur. In conclusion, I just would like to urge the court to consider that this case will have statewide implications on the ability of hospital districts across the state to adequately use its resources to provide indigent care. And because there is no unambiguous waiver with unmistakable clarity waiving its immunity from suit, we would request that the court affirm the trial court and reverse the Court of Appeals.
Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.